I always think about Karate Kid and Mr. Miyagi telling him to wax on, wax off. And he's like, how long do I have to do this for? And he's like, keep going. Don't ask questions. And then, you know, the street kid comes up and tries to attack him, but he's already got this wax on, wax off move. And yeah, it comes out of nowhere because he had been practicing. And so the more that we practice slowing down, what happens is we end up, it comes in when we need it, muscle memory. Yeah. And what's interesting is that we do everything 47% the way we did yesterday. And so the reason why it's hard to slow down is because we have to be alert and intentional when our mind wants to sleepwalk through the action. And so we kind of have to start programming ourselves that every single time we think about food, it is an alarm going off. And it means we need to check in with our bodies and see why we had the alarm. And sometimes it's because we're hungry. And yeah, sometimes it's because we're stressed.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Do you ever pause and say, gee, what is it I'm really hungry for? Well, apparently my guest today must have had that feeling because she's written a book that talking about what we're really hungry for. And I want to welcome Kim Shapira. Kim, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. And I'm also curious what you think you're hungry for.
Well, you know what? That's a really good point. I think that right now, I've just finished having what I often have to start, which is Greek yogurt, which it looks to me like I put like 4 big tablespoons in, and it's pretty close to 20 grams of protein just with the Greek yogurt. And then I'll put a handful of walnuts in, and that adds a little bit too. And then I will add just a tablespoon or two, not very much, of granola to kind of get some more crunch in it. And berries, usually blueberries. I put a handful of blueberries. And I've gotten so that I do that every morning, and I kind of hurried through it this morning. I just had a few tablespoons because I was out hiking.
So but I hear that you're hungry. Thing. You're hungry for food is what I hear.
Yeah.
That's the answer. But I what you basically are saying, the food that you described is gut friendly, containing like all the things that we need to maintain the lining of our mucosal layer in our gut. You've got the good fats, the omega-3s, you've got the antioxidants, the fiber, and the fermented foods and the little, you know, microbes. So and whole grains. So I approve.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Now, does any of that appeal to you when you're hungry?
All of it. I would absolutely love that as a meal or as a snack.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about adding a piece of toast to that?
Well, I'm a registered dietitian with a degree in human metabolism and clinical nutrition, and I am all for whole grains, especially something like sourdough, which has prebiotics that also help the lining of our gut. So I don't believe in removing food unless the food is making you sick. I also see all food as food. And I think we all as individuals need to pay attention to like what we're experiencing. So I happen to like toast a lot.
I like toast too. And it's not in my normal habit, but you know what? When I pick up a loaf over the weekend of something that's like some whole grain sourdough, which is great, and toasted, having that with maybe some local honey on it.
Yeah.
That kind of goes with what I just described, I think.
Yeah. And the local honey is really good for people who are having any allergies to find their local honey. But it's interesting when I really like you. I mean, we just, you know, we have a good rapport. I can already, you know, have that sense. And the thing when I think about you is this quote that I love, and I use it in reference to myself, is she needed a hero, so she became one. And when I think about you and your journey, which I know so little about, I think that you are a hero to yourself in so many ways. And when you think about your food, that's kind of what you're explaining to me in few words. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, no, I get it. Because, and somebody needs to help with the conversations like this. Because one thing that strikes me as we speak, Kim, is that you have a book, and I haven't read the book yet, and I'm looking forward to it. But what makes me a really lucky guy is I'm a podcaster, and I can talk to the person that wrote the book.
Yeah.
And so I hope some of the listeners are saying, gee, we're getting to talk to the author of this book too. But I hope they're not so cheap that they just are listening to the, you know, to us talk and they won't go buy the book too. So
yeah. Well, the book has some great reviews, and, you know, I think it's a game changer and life changing, especially as each person is trying to better themselves and improve their quality of life and their health. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great, great place to start.
Yeah, no. And how long is the book?
How long? It's 246 pages.
Oh, that's nice size. I like that size. Have you done an audio version?
Yes. Yet? Yeah. So it's on, there's an ebook and an Audible version. And I am the reader of the Audible. So if you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy the Audible as well.
Well, I'm going to download it then too, because I found I go through Audible, and actually my podcast is on Audible too.
Oh, and this is good.
You can find all of the podcasts in there as well. But I've also found that I can go to the public library. There's a couple apps, and I don't know how quick it comes up at the public library, but when I'm tired of using up my points on Audible, I go to Hoopla and Libby. Ooh, or something like that. Hoopla, Hoopla, and almost any public library has them. Now, the problem sometimes, for some reason, they're acting like they can't get too many out at a time. So you sometimes have to put yourself on a waiting list. But when you're kind of lined up and you've used up all your points on Audible, you know, switch over to the local public library and use one of those apps, and you can check them out. Usually they'll let you check it out for 3 weeks.
You know what? I didn't know. And that is amazing. Thank you for that tip. That's awesome.
So somebody listening to this, we're going to talk for maybe a half an hour or so. Someone listening to this say, gee, I want more. They might just check and see if it's shown up in the public library. And if they're not cheapskates like I am, they might go ahead and just, you know, use a credit on Audible. And then the other part of my formula is that the reason I gravitate to those is I think that I just need to walk as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And so I like to listen to a book or a podcast and go out for 3 or 4 miles. And we've got the American River right near where I live and Sac State campus that we go through. And it's just great to walk and listen. And I'll listen to this podcast again, and I'll listen to your book too.
Yeah, I think that's great. We all need to be walking.
Got me through my breakfast. What's your breakfast look like?
This morning I'm a big fan of Cheerios. So I know, you know, that's in the news a lot right now, but I have always loved Cheerios. And so I eat them with flax seeds every single morning. Mm-hmm. And they're just really, really, I love them. So, I mean, there's so many scenarios in my life where I didn't have them and then all I wanted was Cheerios. And so I think that there's a lot to learn in just that, which is, I have 6 rules, and the rule number 2 is to eat what you love. And I think when we do that, what happens is we can really identify how food makes us feel. And also we are less likely to eat more than we need when we do eat what we love.
I like Cheerios too. Now, is that a trade-off with oatmeal? I mean, would you get some of the same effect as you're having oatmeal instead of Cheerios?
I do like oatmeal, and I like oatmeal with peanut butter. I mix the two, but I love Cheerios. I think I'm 50 years old. I've had Cheerios probably every single morning for 30 years. It's crazy, you know, and it's kind of like a vitamin in a box. If you look at the back of the label, it's fortified with 100% of so many things, and love it.
I know somebody that was taking too literally some of the concerns about, they come up from time to time. And was believing that they had to go overboard on cholesterol and that they couldn't use milk. And so to eat their Cheerios, they would pour orange juice on it every morning, and which they hated. And I thought, oh man, what a waste. But people jump on a bandwagon like that, and they've anymore, they might see something, you know, on TikTok or Facebook or X and tell them, oh, I think you should stay away from dairy. I wouldn't think of having Cheerios unless I have milk nearby.
Yeah. I mean, I actually use oat milk. in my, because I'm lactose intolerant and sensitive to whey and casein, which are the proteins in milk. But it's interesting when you think about cholesterol, it's really the fat coming from the animal, not anything else. So if you were going to have milk and you had non-fat milk, there's not going to be a rise in your blood cholesterol from non-fat milk sources. You just have to be careful you're not sensitive. And so the other ingredients you would be sensitive to would be the lactose, which is the carbohydrate in it, or the proteins, the whey or the casein.
Now, I want to buy the Greek yogurt. I buy non-fat Greek yogurt. Milk, I go 1%. I feel like it's just a little bit of difference, a little bit too watery, but it seems to me it's better than whole. And yet,
I would agree.
Yeah. So I had a glass before I just came in and started talking to you, and I had a glass of milk. And I was just looking at it, and I think it was like 11 grams, 10 or 11 grams for a glass full of 1% milk.
So 1% milk is going to give you about 3 grams of animal fat. It's going to give you about 7 or 8 grams of protein. And then it could give you, depending on, you know, the 8 ounces, I'm guessing really like right under 15 grams of carbohydrate.
Yep.
I happen to be a big fan of milk. I just can't tolerate it. And I think, you know, we need so much calcium in our life. Yep. Actually, calcium is interesting because we make all of our deposits in our bones by the time we're about 21, and then we're preserving our bones the rest of our life. And so we still need milk because it's giving us about 33% of our calcium needs in one glass.
Yeah.
And fun fact, if you don't have enough calcium, you tend to gain about 7 extra pounds in a lifetime.
That's not too bad. I could live with it. I've gained 700 pounds in my lifetime and lost it.
We need to talk about that.
I know. Just it's one of those things you keep an eye on, hopefully.
Okay. But, so read my book or listen to my book, and then we're going to discuss it again when you're after. Yeah.
Okay. You know, I can't resist the kind of getting on through the day right now because of your books talking about this whole journey of what you're hungry for. You know, it's hard to answer that question when you're watching TV and you're seeing commercials for these, you know, bacon and cheese and sauce and, you know, or Chick-fil-A, you know, deep fried chicken nuggets and stuff like that, because they're designed to be what you're hungry for. I mean, they're designed to make you hungry, aren't they? And
I think it depends. So let's go back to the person who's been restricted.
Yeah.
Their temptation is just too much, right? And so because they're restricting, they're already triggered. They're already emotionally unstable. And so if we can recognize that there are triggers everywhere and the universe is constantly testing us, if we see that they're temptation, then we can't be affected by them. But if we don't see it as a temptation, we kind of end up eating them and wondering like how we ended up there to begin with when I had made a plan not to eat them, right? And yeah. So I always say before you eat, you have to know where your mind is. Mm-hmm. And your mind has to be in your body. So you and I right now could just be having this conversation and also scanning our bladder to see if we have to use the restroom. And both of us can make a plan while we're having a conversation so we know we're safe.
Mm-hmm.
We could do the exact same thing with our stomach to determine if we're hungry or not. But when we have been emotionally triggered, and every human has between 3 and 5 emotional triggers developed in the first 6 years of their life. And when they go through something traumatizing, they develop another trigger. And anytime we're emotionally triggered, our mind kind of jumps out of our body. And we have to recognize, oh my God, I'm over there thinking about, you know, bacon and egg and cheeseburgers when I was just sitting here enjoying this TV program. We have to recognize that. And once we recognize it, we can bring our mind back and scan our body and recognize, oh my gosh, I'm actually stressed from something that happened. And so because of that, my hippocampus jumped right into action and said, the last time you felt this way, we thought of food and food was a good idea. And so we kind of have to start programming ourselves that every single time we think about food, it is an alarm going off. And it means we need to check in with our bodies and see why we had the alarm. And sometimes it's because we're hungry. And sometimes it's because we're stressed or bored or because there's food right in front of us.
I just took a trip while you've been talking here. you triggered me. I was almost thinking, I wonder what this would be like if we were sitting down and we were having a margarita and a big basket full of chips with guacamole and salsa. And I've been known to go through two baskets of chips in the day, you know, and it's like, how can you say no? It's just like so delicious.
Yeah. But what if you, and I love that you brought that up because you're not the only one who's gone through two baskets of chips. Everyone who's listening probably has, I have, but the difference is that when I have two baskets of chips, I'm probably not eating whatever I ordered, or maybe that is what I ordered because I'm no longer hungry for anything else. But imagine if you and I were sitting having chips and a margarita.
Yeah.
And we took a bite of a chip and we put the chip down and we sat back and we tasted the food that was in our mouth. Yeah. Instead of being rewarded with the anticipation I get to put it in my mouth, we actually started to enjoy what was in our mouth. And we chewed it longer than was necessary because food is fuel and there's some fuel in a chip even so. And so we need to chew the food to break it down properly, chew it longer than necessary, maybe drink some water, go back to a conversation, and then come back to the chip. What if we slowed the whole thing down? And what if you looked up from the chips and you saw that I was there and we were enjoying the conversation?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the old idea that you should always set your fork down between each bite, too.
Yes. Yes.
I tend to eat way too fast. But, you know, as you were saying that, I had another picture that I have a granddaughter that's going to be 4 in a few weeks. She can use the same chip over and over again. So she'll go into the salsa and to the guacamole and then lick it off. And then till the chip gets soggy, just keep going back in, which is not terribly good, you know, from a sanitation standpoint. but she's probably eating a healthier meal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just eating the guacamole and the salsa.
I mean, slowing down, like I remember I had a client who in her high school advisory class, the teacher would always bring donut holes. Yeah. And she was the kind of person who would pop a donut hole in her mouth. And I'm the kind of person who would take 2 or 3 bites of that donut hole. Mm-hmm. So I was still eating one while she was finished with 3. Mm-hmm. And so if you think from a weight standpoint, when we eat really fast, we can end up eating a lot of food. But if we slow it down, what happens is our normal responses like kind of come in and say, you're satisfied for now.
Yeah. You know, when I tell people that I grew up on a farm, sometimes they're guessing, well, I'll bet you had bacon and eggs and grapefruit and all these, you know, things first thing every morning. And I didn't. I grew up on having my morning breakfast was Oreos and milk.
Mm.
Like 5 years of nothing but Oreos and milk. And we always had Oreos. And I don't know what it did to me, but
you're looking pretty good and you're fine. And so there's that.
Yeah. And in fact, there's a study. Somebody just did something that did a test with having people take Oreos instead of statins to affect their cholesterol.
No, you're kidding.
No, look it up. I mean, they don't lie. You know, it's true. It's true. And
what happened?
It was just as good. You know, and I wish I could find it because there's actually a podcast that somebody did with it. And he was halfway sciency about the whole thing. I think the person that did it actually was at some university. But I think that but the trick was that you don't overdo it.
Right.
And so it's not such a bad thing if you were, I don't know if you should tell everybody that they should give up on statins or whatever their blood pressure medicine is, but it was interesting that you can even take some indulgences like that and work what goes into it.
Yeah. And so I would say that when you talk about cholesterol and blood pressure, those are metabolic dysregulations. Those are weight-related, diet-related diseases. Mm-hmm. And so I have 6 rules that I use. And the first rule is to eat when you're hungry, right? So this is getting into your stomach and recognizing that it's not scary. Hunger isn't scary and it's not painful, where so many of us have this natural hardwire that hunger is bad, and hunger is actually your best friend telling you your body's functioning properly. Mm-hmm. And so the rule is that when you're hungry, take your normal portion, cut it in half, and wait 15 minutes to see if you need more food. And so what's really happening here is we're taking the Oreos, we're not labeling them good, bad, anything. We're not sensationalizing them. We're calling them food. We're cutting our normal portion in half. We're slowing down how fast we eat them. We're becoming mindful, enjoying the Oreos. And then we're waiting 15 minutes. And you know what studies prove? If you are starving and you eat a piece of bread, you no longer need your meal.
Yeah.
You're full. And so if we can all wait 15 minutes, most likely we're satisfied for now. And I'm all about blood sugar regulation. And so that just means we're going to be hungry again in 2.5-3 hours and we're on a roll.
So that reminds me, there was a study in Japan of what do they call it? There's a Japanese word for it, for eating 80% of what you want.
Oh, I don't know this. I don't know.
It is. And I think it maybe showed up in the Blue Zone with what?
Makes sense.
Or somewhere. And it was, and there was an actual term for it of making it your life habit of just eating to 80%. And then I think you slow down. And if you need some more, then you probably do. But I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Is this in Okinawa?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, and it's, you know, those things, you think it takes a little discipline, but if you're running around and you're in a hurry and you're coming from the office and you got to, you know, drop the kids off and it's so hard not to just swing through McDonald's or somewhere else. And it's more expensive than it used to be. It used to be a cheap meal, but now, you know, if you buy, you know, Happy Meals for, you know, two kids and you're and get a meal for yourself, you're spending $25 anymore.
Really?
And wow. So it's not inexpensive, but expediency takes over. You know,
Yeah. You
can't take a bite and wait because you're driving in the car and people are honking at you and making.
Well, you can. I mean, I always think about Karate Kid. And Mr. Miyagi telling him to wax on, wax off. And he's like, how long do I have to do this for? And he's like, keep going. Don't ask questions. And then, you know, the street kid comes up and tries to attack him, but he's already got this wax on, wax off move. And it comes out of nowhere because he had been practicing. And so the more that we practice slowing down, what happens is it comes in when we need it, muscle memory. Yeah. And what's interesting is that we do everything 47% the way we did yesterday. And so the reason why it's hard to slow down is because we have to be alert and intentional when our mind wants to sleepwalk through the action.
47%. That's pretty precise.
Yeah, it's pretty precise. How did I get there?
Yeah.
I mean, that was from
47% and not 48 or 49.
Yeah, that was from, now I'm forgetting the author. That was from the study on habit stacking.
Mm.
Yeah. And so our mind, it's really interesting because you'll notice our body thrives in consistency. We like to go to the bathroom at the same time, go to sleep at the same time, wake at the same time. We're really very consistent by nature and we thrive when we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we have to be more intentional and alert to make changes.
Yeah.
And if we're emotionally triggered, we have a hard time. But if you go back to what I'm saying, this is what you're really hungry for. There is a chapter in my book called The Wellness Wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And this really talks about the things that are important to a person: finances, adventure, relationships, spirituality, our physical body. You know, there's a few more. And what happens is when we are disconnected from any one of these, we're unwell. And so if we could have check-in points and figure out, how am I doing with my relationship with my kids? How am I doing with my finances? And when you're really like on the right page and path with this, like I would say a 10 out of 10, and you're checking in and you're making strides, mm-hmm. what happens is food only becomes one important part of your life.
You know what? I think as you were saying that, I think that I am drawn to stories. Maybe that's why I like podcasts and books and so forth, but I like stories. So I like stories about food. I like stories about the car I buy. I just like stories. And so if I am going to be enjoying food at a restaurant, or if you're coming to someone's house or somebody made a special pie or something like that, that's probably that atmosphere all around it is as important to me as the flavor, the mouthfeel, all these other things. And I like that idea. Now, in your case of Cheerios, I mean, that's a good story. You can go back to having such a tradition. And,
yeah.
You know, you go back to a lifetime of eating Cheerios is great. Which
I mean,
did you know they did a test on Cheerios back in just outside of Boulder, Colorado? I don't know how many years ago it was, but they got this whole community to like eat Cheerios, and they were monitoring it, the impact that it had on their cholesterol. And it had a really positive effect that people were just enjoying Cheerios every morning, and they got the whole town to do it. I don't know why more companies don't try that.
Wait, I need to know this one too. That's fascinating.
See, I should keep some of these old notebooks that I've thrown these things away.
I think you should. I mean, if we compare your breakfast to my breakfast, I would say the fiber content is probably roughly the same, because you're adding some nuts, you're adding some berries, and really it's the fiber.
Some granola too. I'll put a little.
Yeah, and the granola, yes. If I could get you to add some flaxseed, I'm going to feel great about that. But what's happening is fiber pulls out toxins, cholesterol, extra hormones, things like that. And so as opposed to something like bacon and eggs, where it is primarily animal fat, so it's protein coming from an animal, and to lower your cholesterol, we're supposed to have less than 20 grams of animal fat in a day.
Which brings up another issue too, because if you look at some of the animals that are low in fat, they deep fry them in fat. So if you're getting like fried chicken McNuggets or something, how is that much better than animal fat?
Well, I think let's say they're doing it in olive oil.
Okay.
That would be fantastic, because then you're getting monounsaturated. They're not.
I wish
they did. Yeah, they're probably doing it in rapeseed oil, canola oil. And that is a polyunsaturated fat. So not helpful, not harmful, but a lot of people are sensitive to it. So it's not the same as a saturated fat, unless they're using coconut oil, but I don't think they are.
No.
Chicken would not taste good. It's interesting. I here's a story. When I was in graduate school and I came home from Boston, which was Calabasas at the time, and I went to a restaurant, it was Marmalade Cafe, which is a restaurant all over. And I had ordered a grilled chicken breast mm-hmm. with some vegetables, and it came to the table and it was all shiny. And so I said to them, I just wanted a grilled chicken breast. Is this shiny? Is there an oil on this? So they took the chicken back. They brought out another one. Again, it was shiny. So I said again, I just wanted plain grilled chicken breast. They sent it back. And then finally, the manager came over to me and they said, you know, we actually marinate all of our chicken in oil the night before. What?
I know.
Why would you do that?
Tastes
Why would you do that?
And people will order it again just because they thought, oh, it's delicious. That's what they're going for.
Yeah. And yeah. But again, if we cut our portions in half and we start with half, I mean, there's, you know, when you even think about a restaurant, and I'm 5'2", I could be sitting with someone who's 6'4", or someone who's 10 years old. I could be sitting with anyone at any age, and we're all ordering, let's say, chicken. We can't all possibly be the same level of hunger. And so it's really important for us to be mindful of how much we need. But the chef is going to prepare us all the same portion, because you and I would be very upset if one of us had a smaller piece of chicken.
Well, the other thing that used to happen more often than it does right now is that they bring a basket full of rolls or bread to the table. And before you even get started on whatever else you had going, you could. And I like those places. It was really cool when you go to some, and there still are some, they're that old fashioned restaurant. You can go in and they bring you like sweet rolls. And I go, what's this? You know,
Yeah. Got
these sweet rolls, but they taste delicious. And then you eat. Yeah. And I think, well, that's
the gift that we are totally confused by. Is it really a gift? And, you know, sometimes I eat it and sometimes I don't, but we all can say yes or no, but we have to be mindful if we're not going to be hungry after.
You know, you said something a little earlier about, oh, I know, you were giving me permission to have toast with my breakfast, I think. But you were careful to talk about whole grain. And it is just like, what has everybody been thinking about when we remove all the good stuff to make white bread and you're throwing away, or they're using it for animal feed or something, what is really the best part of it? And I do know a lot of people that just don't like any other kind of bread as much as white bread, because the flavors are bothering them, or it's too much texture or something. But it's like, man, if you're paying attention, it's just, you know, why would you want bread that doesn't have all those good things in it?
You know what? You bring up a really good point. And I have to say, people are very utterly confused again. So, you know, people say bread is bad or unhealthy, and they're lumping bread into just this overall category when there's different types and different grains. And to be honest, not all grains agree with everybody right now. We have all sorts of sensitivities all around us. I don't think we all have gluten intolerances, but I do think we have different levels of sensitivity. But when you look at bread, you should always be looking for a whole grain, which includes the endosperm and the bran, which is really going to improve the quality of your gut health and also, again, pull out extra toxins or hormones or things and help you feel full faster. But let's just say you like white bread. There is a place in your diet for it, and thankfully it is fortified. So I think the worst thing that we can do is shame somebody into thinking that what they're eating is bad. I think we're all walking around with so much shame. But what I would offer instead would be, how do you feel when you eat that bread?
I'm going to shame him, I think.
But go ahead.
I know, it hasn't worked though.
But again, Roger, this is the point. You became your hero. You became the version of you that you needed to help and heal yourself. But it doesn't start with shame. It starts with understanding. I ate that piece of bread and I got so sleepy after I ate it. I wonder what happens if I change the bread type, if I still will feel that way.
Isn't the rice the same deal though, right? I mean, the white rice versus like whole grain brown rice.
I don't know. I feel like rice is rice. And, you know, like I know that, you know, you're removing some stuff when you're having white rice, but rice doesn't have that many vitamins and minerals to, like, you know, write home about. So I feel like if you're having a small amount of rice, but you're having it as part of a balanced meal, I'm okay with it.
Okay, well, we part there. I'm going to be a stickler on the rice thing. I think why not? I mean, there's not that much difference, especially if you're putting something on it to give it some more flavor. But
yeah, and
bran, you know, it's so anyway, I'm a brown rice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to pick the bran. I'm always going to pick it over the non-bran, I think. But let's say I'm in a restaurant and they're famous for this bread, and maybe I want to try that. I think that there's a place in my life where I can have it. I think it's very normal to have bread and walk away and not need to have it 2 days in a row or feel bad about it. Because I think it's the sum total of the rest of the things I'm doing.
You know, I've been hearing people that are putting the glucose monitoring things on their arms that don't really have to, but they're just doing it. And I've heard a lot of podcasts that people that are at Stanford and Harvard, and they're wearing these things and they have interesting stories. One that really sticks in my mind is that the person that said that they can look at this and see it spike when they eat a piece of bread unless they dip it in olive oil. And if they dip the bread in olive oil, it doesn't spike. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. So this is not real news to me, because when you have a piece of bread, you will see a spike within 15 minutes and then a dip. But if you add protein or you add fat, then that kind of dip doesn't happen for 2 to 4 hours until after you've eaten it. So the fat slows down the way the bread is digested and then absorbed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes sense, because a lot of times you're having bread either the side of another meal, or you've got some oils in it of some sort, or you're having a sandwich. And so it kind of balances out.
You know what drives me crazy? Is the person who dips the bread in the olive oil and then orders a meal that's covered in olive oil.
I've done that before.
Drives me crazy.
I don't know. I know people, I mean, olive oil is getting a little resurgence again because some of the studies are still going back and they're going back through the Mediterranean diet and they're saying the key ingredient was probably olive oil.
Yeah.
For a while, it was like fish and wine, which was a good stage. But
I would say it's the polyphenols and the antioxidants. It's the amount of, you know, fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, I think, that are really helpful in the Mediterranean, in my opinion.
Well, but you're not an olive grower.
I mean, I also love olives and olive oil, like love. I think every single day. I think my problem is that people think if I'm dipping it in bread, it's good for me.
Yeah.
And so they're under the impression that some is good, but more is better.
Yeah.
And I'm just in the practice of everything in moderation.
That's not appealing to me. You know, I mean, the moderation is, you know, I suppose good, but whenever I hear moderation, I think boring.
You
got to have something that's a little extreme. So I think I don't think it's moderation to eat Cheerios every day of your life. I think that's.
You don't
have four bowls though. So
no, I know. And my bowl is probably not the same size every day because I'm not the same hunger level every morning.
Yeah. But you know that it's one of those things, though, you think about that. You kind of walk through all these choices people make. And I want to go back to the one, like you're driving through and getting, I don't know, fast food of some sort. But there tends to be a tendency to look at all of the issues related to meat, like all meat's the same. And I think that, and it's not. I mean, if you're going to have some grass-fed lean beef of a certain size, it's one thing. But if you're going to have bacon, which is mostly salt and fat, that clearly has got to be different. But there's not a differentiation in a lot of people's mind. It's just like meat is meat.
That's a really interesting point of view. You're 100% right. So in my mind, when somebody tells me meat and I'm thinking filet or ribeye, a chart immediately appears in my mind. And it's basically comparing egg whites to chicken breast and salmon to a filet to bacon. And so this chart just appears, and then the amount of fat and protein. Now the protein doesn't change. There's 7 grams per ounce, but the amount of fat, so an egg white is 0, you know, chicken is 1 to 3 grams, a filet is anywhere from 5 to 8 grams, and then bacon is 8 grams or higher per ounce.
Yeah.
And that's where it changes. And remember, we need less than 20 grams in a day to lower or to have good cholesterol.
And you got fat and you got salt and you got grease and you got all those things. So they're not the same thing. And the same thing, we can walk through all of the different choices that you can make. And so what bugs me is this kind of general one size fits all. You don't need so much meat. Well, you don't need so much bad meat. You should eat more of the good meat.
Yeah.
But not many people are doing that differentiation, are they?
You make, again, a really good point. And I think I really don't love labels, good, bad, healthy or unhealthy, because I think it's a really scary starting point for some people and there's so much shame. But you're 100% right in saying that there's a difference in the type and quality of bacon, let's say, versus like a non-fat slice of bacon, if that's possible. And also, you do want to make sure you're getting fat. So it's equally important to be getting fat, but we're specifically talking about monounsaturated fats, which are going to come from your olive oils, your, you know, peanut butters, almond butter, tahini, things like that.
Well, and to your point too, the saturated fat issue is there's got to be a difference if you're having a 90-10 hamburger mix versus a 70-30.
Yeah.
And the 70-30s are out there. Now, especially if you're not, if you cook them enough, you're just drying all the juice out of it and the fat comes out and left in the pan. But if you're keeping them kind of medium well, you're just getting so much of that saturated fat you didn't need. And you're not getting any extra protein from it.
Right. And I actually think I'd love to circle and highlight you didn't need.
Yeah.
Didn't need. You don't need. It's not doing anything.
It's no wonder that people just kind of get confused about these things. And, you know, I'm sure you've lost track of how many fad diets and the people that are now, if you ask people, what's the number one diet? Many say Mediterranean, some say DASH, you know. Years ago, it was Atkins for a minute, and then, you know, but it's kind of coming back with the carnivores. And I talked to somebody the other day that just volunteered that she was on keto. She's a woman in her 60s, and she had some good reason for it. She had kind of really gone through it all. But man, that's a lot to sort through.
It's a lot to sort through. But the truth is the ketogenic diet was designed for epileptics.
Yes.
And it serves a purpose. And I think that there's a lot of research when you think about epilepsy, but also even bipolar or anxiety or depression, and how our food is affecting us. And whether this is a food sensitivity, gut health issue, which I believe that it is for sure. I think short term, there are benefits. I don't prescribe that because I think we can fix so many things by just straightening out your relationship with food first. I think it naturally becomes your progression.
It seems like there might be some cancer treatments too that seem to be complemented when a keto is going on. I mean, some very targeted specific applications beyond epilepsy is what yeah. But there's reason to consider some of these. It's kind of like in their circumstance, it might make sense. Mm. Although it's not generally for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, we're all the same and we are not at all the same.
No.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that's always concerned me, well, it concerned me once I figured it out, and that is that doctors don't necessarily have to study nutrition.
30 hours. Yeah. That's all they get.
I did a survey years ago when we were starting to work with almonds, and we did a survey. Actually, I went to the convention of the cardiologist, like the American Cardiologist Association. And we did this little snap survey because we had a booth up and everything. And do you know that most of them wouldn't recommend having almonds because they were high in cholesterol?
What?
Almonds.
Oh, no.
And there is, you know, it's a plant food. There's no cholesterol in almonds.
No cholesterol. And what's really important, and I'm going to let you finish, is that dietary cholesterol has no effect on blood serum cholesterol. The only thing that raises our serum cholesterol is animal fat, saturated fat. Almonds do not do that.
Yeah. Anyway, they didn't know it. They absolutely didn't know it. And I thought they're giving advice to people that come in and say, wait a minute, I've got blockage, I've got, you know, all this other stuff. And so we'll give up the nuts. Well, okay, maybe for some other reason. And that was a majority of attending, and these were specialists.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, you know how many people go to doctors and the doctor's advice is lose weight and come back?
Probably almost everybody.
And the struggle is real. How do I do it? I've tried.
Yeah. Well, there's some new techniques available now too, but I don't want to jump into them. I think that's a longer podcast conversation, I suppose.
For sure. But I would say that my six rules are very much like those because you're becoming mindful. So you're actually working on understanding why your hippocampus is jumping into emotional eating and it stops it just like these other medications. And it's also working on the leptin, which is also teaching you that you've had enough food. So you're becoming more mindful and totally understanding what your body is experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's such a fascinating area that we're engaged in. And people are in these journeys and everyone's journey, I mean, starts every morning with breakfast, maybe. And then as the day comes along, you've got other opportunities and they make other choices. And they're going to hear a lot of people giving a lot of different advice. And So I'm talking, when I listen to some of these podcasts with people that are looking at health span, I mean, I'm talking about clinics that are clinics, but they all confess to being confused about nutrition. So you get people like David Sinclair at Harvard, and you get Peter Attia and his program, and you get the Buck Institute over on the coast, and UCLA, and several of these others that I'm familiar with. I've heard almost all of them confess to being confused.
And I'm not confused.
I know. Well, you need to talk to them. We need to get together. And the other thing is that what they're not confused about is that when they start saying all the stuff they're taking, it's like, holy cow. I mean, if you're taking 37 different vitamins, you know, like every day, and I listen to them and they say, well, I want to be the first one to try it. So they're doing metformin, they're doing NMN, they're doing resveratrol, they're doing omega-3s, they're doing extra magnesium. And I started adding it up and I said, you know, CVS doesn't sell you pill boxes big enough to hold.
True. It's true.
To hold that many pills.
I do think metformin should be in our water. You know, when you look at the research with telomeres, I mean, I think there's other medications right now that might, you know, also do that as well. But the thing is we're only going to live to a certain amount of time, but I do want to have the best quality of my life all the way through. I want to be able to bring my groceries in from the market and put them away myself.
Sure.
But so, yeah.
Metformin, though, I tried it for a while because I read the studies and I thought, I'm in. So I sent the studies to my doctor and she said, okay, I'll prescribe metformin. So I started taking it, but then I went off it again because it has a negative effect or it doesn't have any impact on hypertrophy, which is like hypertrophy.
Were you experiencing that?
No.
Thank God.
I thought, but you know, it makes you can still get strong. So you can go to the gym and lift weights and you can get stronger at any age. But adding muscle, which you want to replace the muscle that you've lost as you get older, it appeared that metformin blunted that.
Good, it could.
And that's why but I'm glad to hear you say put it in the water, because I think of all the studies I've seen lately, one of the really interesting products that are underutilized is metformin. And if you do buy a prescription, it's like $3 for a 3-month supply.
Yeah. But you know, you are not wrong about the muscle breakdown. And so it's not that is a side effect that is not in everybody, but it is a side effect. And so if anybody is experiencing that, they should go off of it immediately. And you're also not wrong about maintaining your muscle mass and protein, how you're moving your body as, you know, we're getting older, which we are both getting older every single day. So we need to maintain that movement and we need to do all types of exercises as often as we can.
So do you take metformin?
I don't currently take metformin. No. Cool.
I got a bottle. I may pull it out and start again. But if we did, I think what they would suggest is you could go to the gym or you could do curls, pushing extreme, and your bicep won't change after 3 or 4 months. You'll be stronger, but it won't get bigger if you're on metformin. Is what the rub against it is supposedly.
That's interesting. And if you start it now, and then do you have a scale that actually measures your muscle mass? Because you could really buy an inexpensive scale on Amazon. I love the Renfro one. It's like $19. And it gives you all this information, like your body water, your body fat percentage, your visceral fat information, your muscle mass, your current weight, your metabolic age. And so you can really see if you were to do a test for 3 months.
What's it called?
Renfro, Renphro. And I think if you were to get the scale and weigh yourself, and of course, you know that the only accurate weight is on a Thursday morning. No other weight in the week is accurate. Our human bodies gain weight and rise Saturday through Monday, and then it takes 3 days to go down, so giving us a Thursday weight. And so if you were to weigh yourself on Thursday and also start metformin and you changed nothing else, we would really be able to identify body fat, muscle mass, and water percentage.
Okay, but if I do this, I'm pretty sure I'm going to lie about the results.
Why? Why would you do that?
I mean, I'm going to have to say, well, okay, like I'm a 200-pound weakling.
But, you know, we all have to start somewhere.
I know. Well, maybe I won't. I'm not sure I'm going to put it on the podcast.
Okay. You can share it with me and I'll keep it private.
I mean, people probably think I'm a body lifter, and you know, and I am actually. I do try to lift weights. And
but what if you actually saw that you didn't atrophy?
Well,
what if you saw improvements?
It has so many improvements. There's so much going for it. There is a study that they're trying to get, I don't know, 500,000 people or something in a study called TAME, T-A-M-E. And there's the Einstein School of Medicine is kind of putting it together. And they've got the go-ahead from FDA to have it be something that's useful for aging. And it's really health span. And all the studies up to now look good. And now they're trying to prove it in this trial. Yeah. But it takes a ton of money, and they it's so cheap. It's easy to get metformin, and nobody makes money from it. So you can't
yeah.
companies to say, yeah, let's spend millions of dollars on testing this because we're not going to be able to make a lot of money. So it just didn't happen. So they're kind of out there, and they can't quite fill it up with all the people they need just because they're lacking money.
I mean, everything is changing, right? These semi-glutides are helping people lose weight and change their metabolic dysregulation, which means they're going to be less cholesterol medications, less blood pressure medications, less blood sugar medications, all the things, because they're not going to have this dysregulation. Yep. And so metformin would also be in that same boat. It's going to improve people's quality of life.
Yep.
And so, of course, there's going to be a lot of resistance, but like I said, I think it should be in our water.
Well, and when you look at stages of life where dementia is at risk too, there's some people have even referred to dementia as type 3 diabetes because that's a correlation between insulin and metformin. Yeah. And that's why metformin is used is for diabetics.
Here's a fun fact. If you add one or two servings of green leafy vegetables a day to your diet, it lowers your cognitive age by 11 years.
Wow. Not the same day.
Not the same day, but over time. So I would get on that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go get some lettuce. But also, it's easy to pop a pill, too. I mean, metformin helps. I know you can't.
Yeah, yeah. I'm all about sticking some kale in your mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this has been really, really interesting. And I think this journey that we're on, people are going to have to go check it out, your book. And like I mentioned, try the public library if you're too cheap to be able to go spend, you know, $14 on, you know.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, just so many people are just searching. Now, one other broad category, though, that you've mentioned in some of the information that I've gotten from you was talking about a lot of people are over-consuming protein. And I push back on those right away, just as things we've been touching on, is that, like, depends. You know, some people do, but if you're a woman, perhaps pre-menopause into that period of life, if you're an elderly man into the 60s or 70s, dietary changes might be different.
I think that we can store carbohydrates in our liver and in our muscles, and we use it for energy 24 hours a day. We have about a teaspoon of blood sugar going to every single cell whenever it needs it 24 hours a day. Yeah. We don't have anywhere to store protein. So when we overeat it, it gets converted to fat. So there is a very fine line. But what I think the miscommunication between the two of us is that it's not that I think we need extra. I think we need enough. And I think we might not be eating enough, but we have to be careful that we're not overdoing it, because that will get converted to fat. So this is a way longer conversation, but when you think about it, we need 0.8 grams per kilogram. If you're a child, if you're growing, if you're recovering from surgery, you need at least 1 to 1.0 grams per kilogram. If you've had COVID, if you've had viruses, if you're not having a lot of muscle mass, you need to be moving your body in a way that's going to grow muscle. And that is when you need 1.1 grams per kilogram. And so you're actually going to need to put on weight on the scale, but it's going to be muscle weight. So I think there's some confusion there, but not in my mind. And I'm not sure if I...
Oh, no, that makes perfect sense. And I'm glad you clarified that. And we need to talk again sometime to get to that.
I would love it.
Because I think there's a lot of people listening that one way or the other, they're on this journey themselves and they've been a little confused. And I do want to mention your book again, that this is what you're really hungry for. Kim Shapiro, it's been a delight talking to you. We need to do it again sometime.
Please invite me back. I had so much fun.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.